everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Chamberlain's Law Firm podcast. With me today, I'm very excited to have Mr. John May, who's a director at our firm, and also James Hall and Duncan Harrington to record a podcast on the assessment process and party costs in the ACT.
Well, g'day guys. Thanks for coming along today.
Thanks, John, and thanks for the invite. Yeah. It's always good to talk about costs early in the morning.
Absolutely. Something we all need to understand a little bit more so we can tell our clients exactly what we do and how we charge for it. So it's really important to get that right out there. First of all, tell us where you guys are from, who you are, what do you do?
Yes, so Duncan Harrington and James Hall is introduced. So we own the business Canberra Costing Consultants. It's a local business in the territory here, and we specialise in legal costs. So if there's a dispute between parties in a legal proceeding, we act on behalf of one party. Or if there's a dispute between a client and their lawyer, we often act in those proceedings as well.
The discussion that we're going to have today is about party and party costs. Can you just tell me a little bit about what the definition of party costs is, and are there any other definitions of costs?
Sure.
And how are they applied broadly?
Yes, so party costs are the common cost order that's made in a proceeding between two parties. Party costs, there's a test to recover party costs, and what you're able to recover and claim are fair and reasonable costs for the attainment of justice is basically the test. Now, what that is, you've got to really delve into it and look at each item of work a solicitor is charged. Another basis for cost orders are solicitor-client costs. Now, they are not too dissimilar for party costs, but it takes into account the rates charged ordinarily between the solicitor and client. And then the third type of cost order that can be made in proceeding is a indemnity cost order. Now, that's almost all of your costs. The test in the relevant rules is basically all costs unless they have been unreasonably incurred. So if you've run the matter efficiently, you'll more often than not almost get 100% of your costs recovered from that. And there's also a sort of a separate type of costs, and that's called solicitor and own client costs. Now, that's between the lawyer and their client and has nothing to do with a proceeding between two parties.
Okay, so separating the solicitor and own client costs, if we can just go through, James, the difference between party and party costs, the difference between that and solicitor and client costs and indemnity costs. But if we can just start off with the first two.
Yep.
Why are there two separate regimes for legal costs?
So the party cost is just supposed to be an indemnity in terms of what one party has paid in the proceeding. Indemnity costs more to do with encouraging early settlement of proceedings. And so if you make an offer in a proceedings and then you beat the offer down the track, you get a special cost order being indemnity or solicitor client. And that encourages settlement and cleans out the courts essentially so that the resources are effectively distributed to other matters.
And Duncan, just on that indemnity issue, I presume the whole idea is not, you know, strictly as a punishment for that, but it's obviously leverage that lawyers use in legal proceedings to say to their opponent, here is our offer for costs, and if you don't accept it, well, we're going to go down the path that we're going to discuss in a minute about going and get a bill of costs drawn and actually assessed in the Magistrates Court or the Supreme Court here in the ACT.
That's right. And the difference can be, you know, if it's an indemnity cost order that you're awarded and say you get your 100% of your costs, that versus your party costs, which could essentially be 60 to 70%, the amount, the comparison there can be quite significant. That's a great result for your client.
So Duncan, you've just mentioned 60, 70% and what's that in reference to?
Yes, so in a legal proceeding, if you're awarded costs on a party basis for that proceeding, that means you're not entitled to all of your costs. You're restricted in what you can claim at the end of the proceeding. And those restrictions are contained in a scale of costs in the ACT, which sets out rates, types of work that you're allowed to claim on a party basis. That will, once you assess your costs in accordance with that scale, you'll prepare a bill of costs, and that will give you an end figure of what your total of your party cost comes at. And generally, that's about 60 to 70% of the total cost you've charged your client.
And so, James, that gap then between what the party costs are assessed at, and then the full bill, that 30% roughly, that's traditionally known as the solicitor and client component. Is that right?
Yeah, so between the 60-70% and the 100, that's the range of, I guess, party costs, solicitor client costs, and then the indemnity costs. So depending on what cost order you get, it goes up in that range. But yeah, based on our experience, it's generally 60-70% for party costs, and they're actually indemnity cost orders are quite rare, so we hardly ever see those. But 60-70% is the general recovery in terms of fees.
Yeah. Okay, so going back to the 100%, 60% sort of thing, when you're saying that there's a recovery under the scale, can you just talk me through what that scale is, where it's contained, and just a couple of some of the interesting parts of that scale?
Sure. So the scale of costs is in Schedule 4 of the Court Procedurals 2006. That's the ACT legislation. So all matters in the ACT Supreme Court and ACT Magistrates Court are bound by that scale if party costs are awarded. Now, that scale contains various items. For example, perusing documents. So that's allowed at an amount of $7.40 per 100 words for each document, only if that document's necessary to peruse. And then there's also allowances for letters. For example, a short letter, an ordinary letter, and a special letter, and they all have their own respective charge. Depending on the complexity of the letter, obviously special would be awarded, so you get the higher rate. There's also just a standard attendance rate now. The scale was just amended by the court as of 1st July 2020. So there's a one-off attendance for anything that is basically fair and reasonable that's not covered by the scale.
When you say it was amended, how was that particular attendance rate amended?
Yes, so the previous scale had various types of attendances. For example, an attendance in court to instruct counsel, an attendance at conference with counsel, an attendance in the court's chambers. So there's various attendances. What the court sought to do is streamline the process now by just having a one-out attendance rate for all those type of attendances. However, they did also remove the rate allowed for an attendance requiring a higher degree of skill and responsibility. What that's resulted in is lawyers not being able to claim that higher rate for attendances such as researching complex areas of law or appearing in court without counsel before a judge or magistrate. So that rate was $400.80 per hour. But now,
what was the sort of accepted skill level for that attendance rate?
Well, in terms of the work, the nature of the work. So it was regardless of your years in practice, it's the actual task itself. So the court would look at what task you are performing and whether that task required a higher degree of care and skill as opposed to just a mundane task or a routine task in litigation. For example, if you're researching on a medical negligence case, an area of the negligence cell or the medical aspect of it, then that might be seen as a degree of high skill and responsibility because it's something not common to a personal injury matter, such as damages and those type of things.
All of the things that the solicitor is being paid to understand already.
That's right.
Probably so, has studied and practiced for many years.
Yes, and that ties into inherent knowledge. So if you're claiming something which a solicitor should already know, then you won't be allowed that item. For example, if I'm researching how to lodge a subpoena and I claim that in a bill of costs, the court will disallow that because they say, well, a person's going to you because you should already know these things. So therefore, I'm not allowing that claim.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm having a look through the scale as we're talking, and I'm seeing a lot of words in this scale for various chargeable items that I'm sure people you know, they'll at least know the words, but they might not know exactly what they mean. And I'll just give you an example. There's a drawing cost, there's an engrossing cost, there's a scanning cost, there's a perusal cost, so on and so forth.
Yes.
All of those things, you know, aside from drawing, really look to me as if you're reading a document.
Mm.
What's the difference?
So drawing, it's sort of developed its own case law over time, but it's basically the application of the mind to the document. So before you type it, you think about it, and then the engrossing is the actual typing of it. So drawing and engrossing always go together, unless you're engrossing something that doesn't need legal knowledge to do. So we always really put drawing and engrossing together, because one's the application of the legal mind, the other's typing it out. And then for perusal of a document is, it's more than just, you know, simply looking at it. It's looking at it and considering the contents. And that's why there's a attendance for scanning as well, because scanning is just, you know, glancing at a document, whereas perusing is looking at it and understanding it and considering it.
So what might be an example of scanning, a document in legal practice, as opposed to, you know, perusing that particular document?
I guess where you've seen similar documents before. So if you're getting letters from Medicare or Centrelink, or, you know, those format type letters that are just templates that the only thing that really changes is a figure on the page.
Yep.
So you'd probably just scan that and...
Yeah. So the test for perusing or claiming a perusal is whether it's necessary to peruse it. If it's not necessary to peruse, then the fallback is a scan rate, or a scan claim, I should say. For example, if you're in a personal injury matter and you receive clinical notes and you get all the pathology records, which can be quite large,
yep,
over 100 records, if they're not relevant to the claim, then my argument would be that would be a scan claim, because you're not perusing each and every little figure in that document. You're simply looking at it going, oh, that's a pathology test, I don't need to know that, and just going through it like that.
And as you guys probably know, such claims, such medical negligence claims, might span over many, many years. What do you say about, for example, those pathology notes coming in, you know, in 2017, and you have a good read at the time, and you apply your rates appropriately, and then immediately prior to, say, a mediation or a court attendance, you really have to go back through and refresh your memory as to what they say.
Yes.
Is that something that's...
Yeah, it depends on the purpose of that review. For example, if you're preparing for that court appearance, then the way you claim that would be attendance preparing for the hearing. So, and that would capture that cost. The issue with clinical notes is the perusal rate is $7.40 per 100 words. Now, clinical notes can be quite extensive.
Thousands of pages.
So if you claim that, you might spend 2 hours on that, which is under $1,000 on your rate, for example, or a reasonable solicitor rate. But if you're perusing those records on the scale rate, it might be about $4,000 or $5,000 you're actually enabled to claim. So if you claim that, and then you later on claim a review of those clinical notes, that would seem excessive. And that's more coming now into the objection side of things, where if you're the party objecting to the bill of costs, but that's how it would work out, or that's how a registrar, in my view, would view those attendances and perusals.
And I suppose that leads into, James, the court having significant discretion,
yep,
over costing items. So if you do end up into a dispute about costs, that is, your solicitor makes an offer for those costs to a defendant, for example, and the defendant doesn't want to pay those costs, what do you do? What are your next steps?
So the offer's not accepted. The next step would be to get a bill of costs drawn up. And so that's really where we come in, is we'll accept the file from the instructing law firm. And basically it's a process of going through the file and attaching the items in the scale to everything that's been done on the file. So where there's a perusal of a letter, that goes in. Where there's a letter drafted, that goes in as draw and engross. Court attendances, everything like that. So we attach a scale item to everything that's been done on the matter to date, and the end result is a bill of costs.
Okay, and that's necessary to do before you can actually take the next steps in litigating over the costs. Is that right?
Yeah, so you're required to file that in the court. So it becomes, it's like commencing a new claim in a way. You file the bill of costs, and that's what starts the cost assessment process. So yeah, it is necessary before you go to the next step.
And do parties in that process often make written offers, and those in terms of their costs, and are those written offers covered by the rules and their consequences for not accepting them?
Yes, yeah, so the court likes parties to negotiate, obviously, and, sure. And part 5A of the, or section 5A of the Court Procedures Act basically says we're all about fast, efficient, just resolution proceedings. So in line with that, you should be making offers. If you don't engage in meaningful negotiations prior to having your bill of costs prepared, then you run the risk of not being able to claim your cost of preparing the bill, which can be quite extensive for a large bill of costs. Therefore, we do recommend making offers prior to getting your bill of costs drawn. You can also make them in accordance with the rules or quarter bank offers. Either can be relied on at the end of the cost assessment if you need to. And we often get instructed to review files or timesheets and give advice to a client on what offer to make to basically protect their interests and where we think the assessment will likely fall, basically.
And if you can't reach that agreement and you've had the bill of costs drawn up and the bill of costs has been filed in the court, what's the next step?
So the next step will be that the other party will have a notice of objections drawn up. And so basically what that is they go through the bill of costs and they apply the case law surrounding costs in the ACT to the bill and come up with some objections. So that might be that excessive time is claimed for something, or that the incorrect rate has been applied, or there's other ones that knock off quite a big chunk of the bill, which is, you know, travel. If you're paying someone to fly down from Sydney for the hearing, such as counsel or the solicitors are in Sydney. Yeah, there's a whole host of objections that have sort of come up in the case law around costing in the ACT, and they get applied by the notice of objections cost consultant to our bill, and then that's when the hearing comes into it, so that you get the bill of costs and the notice of objections and you go to hearing and you argue it out.
And presumably there's a chance between getting that notice of objection to negotiate again, like you said, Duncan, that's what the
Court tells us
to do.
So the objections have to be filed 14 days prior to the assessment hearing date. So within that 14-day period, parties usually exchange offers because they will know the lay of the land, because they'll have the bill of costs and the objections, and then they can weigh up the risk and decide whether to make a further offer in an attempt to settle the matter or protect their position on costs of the assessment.
Right, and all of that fails, you go to an assessment with a registrar, and registrar applies his or her discretion, and then you get a certificate issued, and that's the end of the matter, and somebody has to pay and somebody doesn't.
That's correct, yes. And the assessments can take a bit of time. So what the registrars usually do is deal with the big ticket objections, which may have a big effect on the quantum of the bill. The reason for that is at the first adjournment or lunch break, the parties can go off and negotiate based on those decisions. And it's often the matter settles at that point. If it doesn't, then the registrar will go line by line on the bill of costs and decide each one with short submissions from oral submissions from each party.
All right, and just wrapping this all up now, from a client perspective, you're put in a situation where, for example, at a settlement conference, you're being asked to consider how much your solicitor is going to be paid by the other party. And if you don't think that that's the right amount, What should that person be doing? What should that solicitor be doing? How do we approach you guys, and what's really the system from there on?
Yes, so we often get asked, what are my costs worth on a party-party basis? And yep. We often say, how long is a piece of string?
Exactly.
You do have to dig into it a bit. And
sorry, can I just ask, mm-hmm. Is that because most solicitors are charging not against the scale technically, but on an hourly rate?
That's right. Okay. So the common way a solicitor would charge his client is on an hourly rate. Mm-hmm. That rate is above the rate allowed in the scale of costs, and it's meant to be. So there's no issue there. It's just when you're deciding what offer to make, you don't know, you can't predict the future, so you don't know what's going to be allowed on an assessment, so, and what's fair and reasonable, or what registrar you're going to get. So there are a lot of variables to take into account. And, you know, you also need to have good knowledge of your file, because you need to work out whether cost orders were made against your client or for your client throughout the course of the matter. And if there's been amendments, if you're the party amending, you're generally not entitled to recover costs of the amendment. So there's a lot of variables that go into it. So when you're the solicitor assessing your file to work out what offer you should make, you should take all that into account and make a considered offer, or have a considered bottom line, I should say, because no one's going to make their best offer at the start. So,
and when you do get to that stage, and it's just not certain, or you just don't have, you know, a great feel for what, you know, you don't think that the offer you're getting from the defendant is really a good offer, will you guys take a file and have a look at it and do effectively a scan of that first, or does it always have to come to drawing up a bill of costs?
No, we certainly commonly get instructed to review that file for an hour or two and make a call on what we think the likely assessment outcome will be. We don't delve into the sort of nuts and bolts of it. We look at it more from a global basis and look at the big ticket costs within the matter and big events within the matter, and make a determination on what would be allowed, and then come up with a figure based on that.
And then if the fight sort of really did go down to the ground, you've got to, you know, get in and assess every single technical line in accordance with the scale and
take
it from there.
Each and every document. So it's a bit of an arduous process, but you know, we enjoy doing it because we just see it as another form of litigation. So
I'm glad you guys enjoy it, because I don't know how you do it. But
I had a senior counsel once refer to it in court as the dark arts of legal costing. So
I'd probably agree with that. Well, gents, look, thanks so much for coming in to talk to us today. Again, just for everybody listening, that's Canberra Costing Consultants, James and Duncan. So if you've got any legal costing questions at all, go to these guys. They'll be able to help you out.
Thanks, John. Much appreciated.
Thanks, John.
Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. As with all Chamberlain's Law Firm podcasts, the information that you have heard in this podcast is not legal advice and cannot be considered legal advice. If you have any questions or queries, please do not hesitate to contact our office on 02 6188 3600 or otherwise look us up on our website, which is www.chamberlains.com.au.